You're listening to the Tarhurst End podcast by Reading fans for Reading fans.
Hello and welcome to the Tarhurst End podcast with your host Mark Mayo, and a special interview this week during football suspension with former Reading striker Simon Church, man who played over 100 games for the Wolves, joining as a youngster in 2003, left a decade later with a championship winner's medal to his name, and really a very interesting career that ended early through injury. So we cover all of that, all of his business opportunities since then, which are certainly quite interesting, and his time in the Reading Youth Academy under Raymond Dolan, and the players that he came up with, from Gylfi Sigurdsson to Harold Sankano, and then of course that championship winning team, and for him unfortunately the exit that he had from the club after that. So without further ado, here is the Tarhurst End meets Simon Church.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Simon Church, welcome to the Tarhurst End podcast. It's a pleasure to have you on, a player who has, enjoyed and endured a bit of a varied footballing career, which certainly ended before its time, and we sort of sit here now in, I suppose, the crazy world we're in now. There's almost a sense of a parallel universe somewhere where you're still scoring goals for Reading, but it's a pleasure to have you on.
No, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on.
That's absolutely fine. So let's sort of bring you all the way back to the beginning then, to sort of start with then. It was the early 2000s and you're playing for your local team, Wickham, and then you get the call up saying that Reading are interested. Reading are sort of upwardly mobile championship club at that time. You joined, I understand, as part of the Nathan Tyson deal. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know too much about that kind of stuff, but I knew... At the time I was involved, I think it was me and Scott Davis. We were both at Wickham, and I think Nathan Tyson was part of the deal to bring Nathan Tyson to Wickham. I'm not 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure it was. Obviously, as a young player, you don't know anything. The goings on, I'm sure it was all done board level. It was just the opportunity for me to. I'll always remember my last game for Wickham Wanderers. It was like Cambridge away, and then one of my first games for Reading, I played against Arsenal under 14s at Highbury, and I thought, okay, well, this is the difference between, you know, playing for Wickham and playing for Reading.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Scott Davis there. So you came into what turned into what was a sort of golden generation of academy players. We had sort of Gylfi Sigurdsson, Jem Karachan, Alex Pearce, Hal Robson-Kanu, just to name a few, who came sort of up with you. Did you realise when you did kind of join, or was it a bit later on that you thought, there's a really good crop of players in this team?
To be honest, as soon as I came in, I knew that the level was higher. I never kind of looked around and thought we're all going to come through together. It was kind of, you know, at that age, 14, I've got the opportunity to play against better teams with better players. We'll just take it from there. I always kind of stayed quite humble, I never got ahead of myself, worked hard. It was all I ever wanted to do, play football. So I didn't really take notice of anyone else and what was going on. I always felt like I had something to prove, whether it's training or matches. And coming through the system at Reading, you knew straight away you're in an environment where you're given all the tools, you're given all the opportunities to go and give yourself the best shot. And the longer it went on, I think we all saw opportunities into the first team if we were doing the right things. And again, there was quite a few of us that made that step up together.
Yeah, what was life sort of like day to day in the academy then? Because Reading's academy, I suppose when you first joined it, was in its early days. It wasn't a well-known academy. But by the time you did come into the first team, and as we're sitting here now, it is one of the, you have to say, one of the most productive academies in the country. So what was the sort of mantras that they managed to instill in players like yourself that actually worked in transitioning you from a young player to a sort of first team regular?
I think it started as soon as I came into the club. The people, the coaches there were a real tight-knit, close club, and we knew exactly what we needed to do to be successful. through the younger ages, the coaches I had, I really respected them. You could see, you know, if you did the right things, you took on board what they were saying, you'd progress. And obviously keeping the same level of ambition, they always said there's always a route to the first team. So we kind of stuck with that and believed in and we bought into what they were trying to kind of mould us into, which effectively led us to the youth team where Eamon took us on. And he was a massive factor in a lot of the players that have come through their careers. I mean, what he brought to us, not just on the pitch, but off the pitch, in terms of support, in terms of mentality, in terms of focus, in terms of, you know, kicking us up the arse when we needed it. it was a case as well, when we were in the youth team, we not feared the first team, but we had so much respect for them, where we knew if we had to step up or do our jobs, and if we step out of place, we'd definitely know about it. And I think that's changed over the years. There's not so much of a respect for older pros. I always remember I come into the first team to train a couple of times when I was 17 or 18, and, you know, if I made a mistake, or I'd know about it. If I said something, I wouldn't even dare say something because of the characters that were in there. And I think, yeah, that's definitely changed nowadays.
Yeah, it's interesting with the, you know, the characters that you would have seen as a young player, obviously part of a really successful team off the back of the first promotion to the Premier League. What were the first team players that you kind of came in to interact with them? Was it the strikers? Did you kind of, was it, you know, Dave Kitson, those sort of characters? Or was it more, obviously Graham Murty was the captain then. Which sort of players did you actually come across?
To be honest, they were all really, really good. I think they all wanted the best. I mean, it was a great squad, great team. They obviously won the league that year. We were in amongst it. I think it was me, Alex Pearce, Jem Carrican, Howe at the time, were in and around the first team squad. And again, they were brilliant. Like I said, they let us know when we were doing something wrong. But at the same time, they kind of had the respect for us because we weren't, you know, the typical younger player now who think they've cracked it at 17, 18, haven't played a game. They kind of respected that we wanted to learn, wanted to do the right thing. And more than anything, we respected them as players and as people. And that enabled us to kind of integrate into the team a lot quicker. There was a lot of pranks, a lot of big characters in the team as well. So you kind of weren't allowed to put a foot wrong.
Yeah, you weren't able to sort of become Billy Big Boots in a team, I suppose, that had also, obviously, as you say, had achieved such great things, that if you go into that thinking you're suddenly a part of it, you've got another thing coming in a way, haven't you?
Yeah, exactly, and that's it. You're always kind of, on a day-to-day, I'd say, from the age of 16 to probably, yeah, 20, 22, 23, you're judged every day. Whether that's training, your mentality, if you put a foot wrong, you know, it can go against you. So, yeah, we kind of had that instilled into us from a young age coming through the academy. And, you know, we had a good manager. We didn't fear him. We just knew, again, not to put a foot wrong, because it could cost us an opportunity or chance to train. And I'll never forget the first... my first start for Reading was the playoff semi-final, second leg, and before the game, Wally Downs, I only knew I was playing the day before, and Wally Downs brought me in before the game, named the team the morning of the game, brought me into a separate room. He says, I don't know how the fuck you managed to start this game. And I just thought, oh wow, okay, this is it now. And to be fair, it gave me a little boost, done all right, and then, yeah, went from there, really.
Yeah, that first start, because it was the second leg of the Burnley playoff, wasn't it? We lost the first one 1-0, and it felt going into that like there was an inevitable end to the sort of Coppell era was before us, sort of thing. And you starting, I think, did you start on the wing, or did you start
up front? I started, like, right of the three.
Yeah, because... Was it? Do you think you were ready? Kind of looking back on it now, do you think you're actually kind of ready for that game, or was it basically, in you know, if you're being harsh, you could call it maybe a roll of the dice from Coppola as a way of just sort of, you know, trying to invigorate something.
People will have their opinions, of course. I mean, I was on loan for, I'd say, the majority of my 18 to 19-year-old. I was on loan 4 times.
Mm.
The first year was to get a bit of experience. Second year, I got injured, shock. And then I'd done well at Leyton Orient. I was doing well. I was scoring goals for the under-21s at Wales. I was captain of under-21s at Wales. And I think I was on a good vein of form. There's a few injuries going in the first team.
Yeah.
And I never wanted to play out on the wing. I hated it, to be honest. But when their opportunity set, I got recalled early from Leyton Orient, and he spoke to me. I think I was there for a couple of days back at Reading. He spoke to me, he said, "Do you feel comfortable playing on the right of a free?" I said, "Yeah, of course. At that age, I'm going to take any opportunity." And
yeah.
I never thought for one instant. I thought being on the bench in the semi-final playoffs to get to Premier League is unbelievable for me at that age. But never thought I'd start. And then, he gave me the starting role. And you know what? I thought I was ready. Whether anyone else did, I always believed that, you know, I'm going to make my debut. I want to play in big games, so I might as well start as soon as possible.
Yeah, being thrown in at the deep end. And what are your memories of after that game? And with, I think it was on the same night that Steve Coppola announced he was going to resign. What were your sort of memories of being in the dressing room after that, and how, you know, people were reacting and everything?
Yeah, I think there was the sense that when I came back, you know, the players were ready to move on. The group was ready to move. Mm. I think they achieved what they did in the Premier League, trying to get back up to it. Didn't happen. I think everyone was quite loyal at the time to stick around for that. But you know, when the opportunities arise to go and play higher, I think it was definitely time. It was definitely time for Steve Coppell to have a bit of a change. Time for players to have a change. You could sense that. And I think the club could probably sense that as well, and hence why they decided to take a new direction with everything.
Well, and a new direction was certainly what we got with Brendan Rodgers coming in. He was a massive figure in the game, but when he came to Reading, he was kind of making his tentative first steps as a proper manager. What was your first impression of Brendan Rodgers? Because a lot of people, even, you know, Reading players who perhaps didn't do so well under him, will say he was a great man manager, a great coach. What was your sort of first impression of him?
Well, I had the experience of Brendan when I was in the youth team.
Mm.
So he used to manage the age above, and I used to come over and train a couple of times. So we knew of each other before that. When he came in, I just, being honest, I absolutely loved him. I loved, he was different. He had a philosophy, and he wanted to stick with that. You know, he'd done a lot of learning, a lot of taking sessions from other people, top class managers, coaches. And as a man manager, he's right up there with the very best. And to be 100% honest with you, through all I experienced in football, to be a successful manager, all you have to do is manage the players. That's all you have to do. You can give them an outline, just manage the players. And he was brilliant at that. I mean, for me, he gave me a chance. I started most of the games up front in that season. I had an okay start to that season, but he believed in me, and he was there, you know, to put your arm around you when it's not going well. He was there to, you know, give you a kick up the arse when it's not going well. But yeah, I mean, I felt at a young age I could knock on his door and we could have a conversation, and it's not like, you know, the divide wasn't big. He was always open to helping you and giving you advice. And I mean, the training sessions, we never did the same training session ever.
Mm.
So it's refreshing as a player to come in and, you know, the session's been set up. You're going in, you, you know you're training for an hour and a half, you know you're training here for half an hour, here, ran so smoothly and training was brilliant. It was just a shame, and I loved the way we played. It was just a shame that we didn't probably have people that bought into it as much. We probably didn't have the players that could pull it off as well. I mean, we're in the dogfight. We ended up in a dogfight in the championship. It's difficult to get out of that with the style of play as well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? With the Rodgers, the sort of Rodgers legacy, you can say, at Reading is almost one of a missed opportunity, isn't it? Because we know that he did turn into a fantastic manager, and from the things that you say, and we've heard it from other players as well, that he was already a good manager when he was at Reading. It was just, was it a case of almost too much of a change in environment from the Koppel mentality to the Rodgers mentality, in a way?
Yeah, I mean, the style, the day-to-day, his philosophy, everything was completely different. I mean, from a personal point of view, I was all for it. I absolutely loved it. There was players that didn't really buy into it. Players that didn't really like his style or really get what he was trying to do. But you're going to have that. And I think, you know, at the time we were struggling and the club had to make a decision. It obviously proved to be the right decision at the time. Yeah, I certainly enjoyed and loved every minute under Brendan.
Yeah, I remember being in the away end as you got your first goal against Peterborough, and in a way that kind of summed up the Rodgers tenure, really, because we were 2-0 up at half time. Yourself and Gilfie had scored good goals, and we somehow managed to not get the results. And it just shows, isn't it, that it is that the results industry that it is such a doggy dog world. And Brian McDermott came in, a man who I presume also you knew previously as well, because another man who'd worked with, he'd been reserve team manager and had sort of done his hours in the backroom stuff, hadn't he?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was going back to that era of Brendan. I think a lot of the playing, we had to grow up very quickly as players. We were 20, 21, and there was a lot of young players at the time that were, you know, the spine of the team. So maybe we didn't have too much experience where we needed it, but at the same time, yeah, I think, you know, Brian came in. It was refreshing. Everyone knew Brian. Everyone knew what a good man he was. And again, he was just a good man manager. Was there anything spectacular on the training field? No. Did I learn a lot? No, I didn't really learn anything. But what we did have, we had Gibbo, who was assistant manager, and we had the staff at the training ground. And what it built was, inside the training ground, inside the dressing room, we had the best dressing room the year, especially the year we got promoted. It was by far one of the best dressing rooms, and that makes a massive difference. So for people to say, you know, Brian was so successful, he created that kind of community inside, you know, the staff, everyone was so close together, and that's why we've done so well.
It's interesting you say you didn't sort of learn much in that sense. Was that because the playing style, it had gone away from back to the sort of Koppel-esque, you know, 4-4-2, get it wide, get it in the box sort of thing? Do you think that is something that isn't, you know, you don't as a player learn so much of an all-round game in that? Are you trained to do sort of specific jobs and you learn that one job, and maybe that kind of does neglect sort of other areas of your game?
Well, as a player, you adapt to the style that the manager wants. You do what the manager wants. You play on a Saturday. So, I mean, Brian did go back to kind of the Steve Koppel way, where as a striker I was expected to run in the channels, I was expected to run, you know, get chase lost balls, get up the pitch, get forward, try and nick a goal. And it's probably a bit harsh for me to say I didn't learn anything, but it went back to what I kind of knew. I knew my role, And to be fair, it was effective. We all knew what we had to do. We didn't have the best players, especially the year we won the league. We didn't have the best players in the league. We didn't have the best team. But everyone who we played against hated playing against us because they knew what we would come in, and we knew how to play the style that Brian wanted.
Yeah, and it put you in a kind of unsung hero role, didn't it? Because everyone remembers Lafondre coming off the bench and getting the goals, and particularly I remember one against Watford in that year. I think it is a late win that we got there. And what had happened in the sort of 80 minutes prior to that is that you had run your socks off and, as you say, gone down the channels, chased the lost balls and everything. And that had, in essence, opened up the route to victory that we did take.
I mean, a lot of people will have their views on, you know, the style of play as a player, not just myself, as any player, they'll have their opinions. I didn't really do it for any kind of plaudits. I knew that I had to work hard. If I wasn't playing well or wasn't scoring goals, I had to try and affect the game some way, or at least work hard. That was always my kind of thing. If things weren't going well, I wasn't scoring or wasn't getting chances, at least work hard. So yeah, maybe sometimes I didn't get, you know, what I deserved, but that's what I was like every time I stepped on the pitch. I kind of didn't do it for that. I wanted to play in the Premier League so much and be successful. And at the time, I was playing for Wales consistently. So for me, every time I stepped on the pitch, I thought I've got to at least put in some kind of performance to stay in the team.
Well, in that, just to go back to sort of McDermott's first season, that was the one, I suppose, for your goal scoring was arguably one of the best sort of seasons, the end of that 09-10 stint, which, as we kind of pulled away from relegation trouble, I just remember that season for being, quite frankly, fun. The way that there wasn't too much pressure on the team, the playoffs were too far away, really. But we did get, you know, a number of big wins, you yourself helped yourself to a number of goals, and I remember against Preston, that last kick of the season, it was. You'd only been on the pitch 5 minutes and turned round and pinged this sort of on the turn volley into the top corner. Would you say that is your best goal that you scored in a red shirt?
Yeah, I'd say best. To be honest, it either hit me and went in from 2 yards, or I've scrambled one in. So I'll take that one for sure. Yeah, I think I scored 3 or 4 outside the box my whole career, so it wasn't many outside there. So yeah, I think that again, that season was a roller coaster, and it showed. Yeah, you're right. Players, when there's not as much pressure on players, and you know you've got the backing of the manager, you've got the backing of the fans to some extent. You know, it makes a huge difference on the pitch, and I think we showed that. You know, the back end of that season.
Yeah, and you developed sort of over your time at Reading a knack for the big goals. I can think of against Liverpool in the FA Cup, a couple against West Ham in that 11-12 title winning season at home as we beat them 3-0 with some late goals, and one away at Leeds as well. Do you look back and think that, you know, you to have produced in those moments is the sort of crowning moment of a career and everything? Because you can score, you know, if you score the last 2 goals in a 6-0 rout, that's all good and fun. But to score against Liverpool, to help in the 2 goals in a 3-0 win against West Ham, who were the sort of title challenges that year, that is another level of goal scoring, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there are, like, it's not until you come out of football where you look back and think, okay, that was a great moment. Because at the time, you don't think that, and you don't allow it to kind of get into your head. I think especially that title winning season, it was more about playing your part and get, because we were such a tight-knit group. It was, you know, Alfie would say the same. He scored a lot of goals and he was a great impact in the season, but it was all contributing. He wouldn't ever turn around and say, I kind of, you know, got us the goals to get us into the Premier League. It was, I think if you look all over the pitch, everyone was playing their part, from even the fans. I mean, I've been back a few times since retiring and since leaving the club, even at the stadium. I haven't seen an atmosphere like that, like the last the second half of the season since then, really. So I think it all came together. I played my part, I scored some important goals, but I could have scored a lot more. And do you know what? It was an amazing season, and we achieved what we achieved, and it's great to look back on and be a part of that, for sure.
Yeah, well, in your time at the club, there were, as with any football, a lot of players signed for your position as you kind of went on. You think of Matthew Mansay, you mentioned then Adam Lafondra, Jason Roberts all came in. What are your thoughts as a player when you have players signed for your position, and you know you've got someone like Jason Roberts with a lot of experience, maybe Matthew Mansay you hadn't really heard of before he came in. Do you find yourself impressed by these players or worried about them coming in or what?
I think players would definitely worry. Not saying I would worry. I'd relish that. I mean, coming through Reading, I had some great strikers in front of me. People that I learned: Kitch, Doyler, Lee Relief, Shane Long, and they were competing against each other all the time. So I'd kind of never worry about that. As I said, as a striker, you're always going to be looking over your shoulders. If I'm scoring enough, someone else come in, will score more. I mean, if you live like that, you're never going to get anywhere. So at the end of the day, I'd be gutted if I didn't play. And when I did play, I'd try and do my hardest. And you know, at the end of the day, as a footballer, as a striker, you'll play if the manager wants you to play. There's a lot of times where I felt like I've deserved to play and haven't, but that's just football. There were some good players that came in, and then when you come out of the team and the team starts winning, it's difficult for you to go back into the manager's office and say, why am I not playing? So, like I said, at that stage of my career, for sure, it was definitely about, you know, being part of the bigger picture of, you know, being a successful team and getting ourselves into the Premier League.
Yeah, which is something we almost did in 10-11 with that playoff run, as we beat Cardiff in the playoff semi-finals with that brilliant night in Cardiff, and then the final against Swansea. It was, I mean, you were on the bench for it, so I'm sure you were feeling it as much as the rest of us, the sort of topsy-turvy nature of that final and coming second best in it. But what happened, you know, in the dressing room afterwards? Is it, because I remember, I think it's Shane Long and Matt Mills both left, and in the aftermath and the sort of, even after the weeks after that, what was the sort of mood around the club? Was there a sense that everyone was ready to go again and go next year? Or what did a lot of players sort of sit in there after that playoff final and think, you know, that was our one chance?
That's a good question, to be fair. It's difficult when you have a season like that season where it was all over the place, in terms of results, performances, players, everything. And we got, you know, going up through the playoffs, you've got one game to basically be a Premier League player. And we were so close, we were so excited. I can always remember the night before, we're all in the hotel watching the thing. We all believed we did it, we could do it. And then obviously when the game finished, we're in the dressing room, you can't hear a pin drop. You can see on the boys' faces, we were gutted, as I'm sure everyone in the stadium and watching at home was as well. I can remember there was a party afterwards, and to be honest, I think only a handful of players went. I went straight home. I was gutted. I just wanted the season to finish. I didn't want to talk about football or think about football for a good couple of weeks. And then, to be fair, we came back in pre-season. Obviously, looking at the season, at the start of the season, after a disappointment like that, it's hard to get, you know, yourselves back up and do it all over again and go one step further. A lot of players had the opportunity to leave. But to be fair, within, you know, the first couple of weeks of being back, we all said, you know what, we got so close. There wasn't too many changes that season in terms of people coming in and out. But yeah, we all kind of started believing it, I'd say, after Christmas that season, because we had a terrible start.
Yeah, there was that massive... It was effectively a hangover, wasn't it? And it came into a sort of scenario where we had to... I think we had to win, basically, our last 7 or 8 games, and we managed to string together, as you know, the West Ham, Southampton and the Brighton away games. I remember going to all of those thinking, well, if we win one, we've got a good chance. But we won 3 of them, and in the end, we went to Birmingham on the last game of the season and lost that, and it didn't matter because it was already done. And was that almost surprising for you as a player and as a team, that it was so... It just came off so perfectly, that in a way that no one, even the most optimistic fan, would have predicted?
No, to be 100% honest with you, I don't think we believed it until, I'd say, January time. Because we, as you said, we had a slow start to the season. There were times, August, September, I think, where we were thinking, oh, it's going to be one of these dogfight seasons. And, like, mentally, it's difficult to keep... It's difficult to have the, you know, your sights set on promotion when you're playing Saturday, Tuesday, and you're not winning, you're not picking up points. I don't know what happened. I don't know what it was. As I keep saying, that group that we had in house was so good. There's no better group in terms of personnel, how well we all got on with each other, the relationships we had with all the staff and everything was great. And I think it just clicked. We just went back to basics. Didn't play attractive football. It was ugly. We were nicking 1-0 wins, hanging on, and we just believed after that. And I think momentum in football is huge. And once you get the confidence, I think we actually believed that we could get promoted. We never thought we'd try and win the league, but promotion was our first thought. We didn't want to go to the playoffs again. We wanted automatic promotion. We didn't want to go through that again. So I think that drove us on as well. And you know, we just kept winning. We kept just learned how to win as a team. And as I said before, it was a group. It wasn't so much, you know, the same 11. It was a group effort from the staff to players, and it all just worked so well. You could see it, and you believed it in house every day. We believed that we'd get promoted and win the league.
Well, what are your memories of the celebrations then? Because to have gotten over the line and everything, and as you say, if it's such a tightly knit group and everything, I'm sure the celebrations would have been great fun.
God, yeah, they were really good. I mean, we started realising, what game was it? Well, we had a good time after Southampton, and then we started thinking, okay, we can do this. I can't remember too much of it, to be honest. I think it's not in the Forest game.
Yeah.
We all went out. I don't know when we came back. Probably a couple of days later. but yeah, as I said, we just enjoyed our time together as a group. We all got on. There wasn't really any clicks. We all had a laugh, but we all, at the same time, knew what we had to do. And it was such a good time. We all loved being together as well, which was a matter, and you rarely get that, to be honest. You rarely get that.
Yeah, it's interesting because you, as a lone player, I suppose you've now been in a high number of clubs who have, you know, you've been sort of parachuted in and maybe gone after a few months or whatever. Is it difficult to sort of just seamlessly enter? I suppose any workplace, it's difficult to make friends instantly, but with footballers as well, it's such an intense, you know, with the dressing room, you're relying on each other much more than any other profession in a lot of ways. And is it so difficult to become a, you know, part of a team quickly? Or have you actually found it as well that you've gone into some places and it has been really easy and you think, actually, this is a really good place to be?
Well, yeah, when you feel like you've fitted in straight away, that's, you know, you're in a good place. I mean, as you mentioned, I ended up playing for quite a few clubs, and on loan and you can sense, if you're on loan, for example, you've got the mentality of going in, doing well, get back out, see what happens. So it's a different mentality than joining a new club. But any new player going into a new club, number one, on your first day, you have to earn the respect of the players and the manager. So the first task you want is for them to come out thinking, do you know what, he's a good player.
Yeah.
And then that relaxes everything. It's difficult, yeah. It's like starting school. You've got to, you know, make new friends. You'll gravitate to certain people. But yeah, like I said, on loan is different. You go in, try and, you know, set out what you achieve as from a loan, and you know you're getting back. So, I mean, that group at Reading and the group where we went to the Euros with Wales, anyone could have walked into that group and fitted in and felt part of the team. I've been to others where on my first day I thought, no chance. Like Huddersfield, I went on loan to Huddersfield. I think it was the year we were in the Premier League on loan, and things weren't going well at Reading. In a bit of a bad place, went up to Huddersfield, and I just thought, no chance. Hated it. Played right midfield first game, completely head gone.
Mm.
So it's quite easy to have that. I mean, for a footballer, mentality is everything. Mentality is 80% of it. If you're not going in, you're not enjoying somewhere, you're not wanting to go into training, you're not looking forward to a Saturday, you've lost already.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You mentioned then when you went to Huddersfield and the idea that things weren't going well for you at Reading was... It actually surprised me when I look back and I was looking through your stats to prepare to talk to you. And it surprised me that in the Premier League season in 12-13, you didn't actually get on the pitch for a Premier League game. You came on in a cup game, but... How did that sort of affect you, and what do you feel were the reasons for that ultimately, that you were part of a good team in the Championship, you were still part of the squad and part of the team that got promoted, and then to get into the Premier League and not be able to contribute on the pitch and to have a run out in a game, how did that sort of affect you?
Yeah, it was horrific, to be honest. Like I said, coming through the academy... you're treated differently than you are being brought into a club. I felt like, yeah, that season I deserved an opportunity in the Premier League. I was playing consistently for Wales, scored, you know, some important goals to get us up or help us get us up. And the problem is with football, a lot of decisions aren't made. You know, manager level, people talk, you know, there's a lot of politics that goes on in football and contracts, you know, bullying. These kind of, I say bullying, but they can force your hand on a lot of things. So I think at that stage, I deserved an opportunity. Pre-season, I can remember I had a really good pre-season. I think I scored the most goals in pre-season. I was on the bench for the first game of the season against Stoke. Didn't come on, and then our second game was against Chelsea.
Yeah.
Brian called me and said, I'm going to go with a more defensive bench. And to be honest, we had a bit of a disagreement. And at that time, we were discussing a new contract. And without going into it too much, there was a lot of politics around everything. And, you know, I got made to train by myself, basically. I got made to train with the under-21s, with the reserves. I kind of got taken away from the group for a long time, wasn't allowed out on loan. And I might as well be honest about it, because that's just what happened. You know, did I deserve my chance? I thought so. But yeah, some things are out of your hands, and I've always been a good professional. I've always kind of gone with it. I didn't kick up a fuss. I thought I deserved to have a say at 24, been with the club a long time, 10 years I think at that stage, full blown international, played enough games, and there was a lot of disagreements, which kind of led me to training by myself and playing with the reserves that season.
Do you feel like the club was kind of it was in the Anton Zingavich era by this point, and the money that was being thrown, figure like Pavel Pogrebniak came in, who the wage that he was on is vastly disputed, but it was maybe quite a big wage. It was a different club in effect that came back down from the Premier League to the one that went up. Do you feel that you could see that coming, and you could see it happening in front of you, because the, you know, the mentality and the way that things were operated, it did kind of, you know, slightly alter as soon as that that change of ownership and everything came in?
Yeah, I think you could see it, you could sense it was starting to be different. I mean, like you say, Pavel came in. He was a great guy, but we all heard and knew about, you know, the goings on with financial stuff. When that kind of happens, it creates a little bit of a divide in the group. You could see a couple of things that were quite questionable, board level. You just think, do you know what, this isn't going to end well. I think as a player, you don't really get involved in that. You can see it, but you can't affect. All you can affect is what happens on the pitch.
Yeah.
And like I said, at that stage, there was a lot of things going on that was out of my control. I think if anyone at the club turned around and said I wasn't good enough or I didn't deserve my chance to play, that I think they'd be lying 100%.
Yeah, and it got into a situation because you ended up going on loan in it's quite early on in the season, it's about November or so time that you went on kind of one of those emergency loans to Huddersfield, which you just said didn't work out at all well for you. And did you get the sense that before the loan, you know, you almost had no choice effectively if you were going to play football at all that season?
Yeah, I think at the time, after we had the disagreement and a couple of games went past, and I kind of found myself getting moved out of training and moving with the reserves and the 21s, I kind of knew that either they were trying to make me sign a new contract, which was, there was an offer there, but was it in the best interest of myself or the club? I mean, at the time, do I look back and say I regret it? I can't really have any regrets, really. I would love to have played in the Premier League for Reading. That was my dream at the time. Felt like I deserved it. But yeah, when you're not given the opportunity to do that, I wasn't allowed out on loan until I think it was like the deadline day, where I moved to Huddersfield, and they just said, right, just you can go for a month. But I thought maybe, okay, if I'm not going to play at Reading, I'd try and get out in January. But again, it's in Reading's hands. They can ask silly money for you, they won't let you go. I kind of knew my career was finished at Reading in January unless a new manager or a new management came in. After January transfer window was shut, there was a few chances where I nearly left. But yeah, once Brian got the sack and Nigel Atkins come in, I think I was the only professional player outside of the 23. And yeah, he was going to put me in the squad, and then realised I wasn't able to be picked because I was outside the 23. But again, I just carried on. You know, if you want to put me in the reserves or whatever, I'll do it. But it was tough, real tough time.
Yeah, what was the with Atkins coming in then? Was there a sense that, I mean, had the opportunity, as you say, been, if you'd have been registered for the Premier League, do you think you would have got that opportunity to play? Because it sounds like when Atkins came in, he obviously wanted to survey all of his options available to him. But with you, he just simply, it sounds like he just didn't have the chance.
Yeah, 100%. I think it was, you know, the damage was done by then. I couldn't go back. I can always remember I think it was Brynjar was on the 23, and he took a coaching role, and he was still, you know, registered for a Premier League, and I was training with the 21s, and yeah, he questioned what was going on, and you know, I'd been around long enough then to understand that football's very ruthless. As a player, you're kind of, you know, if you're given an opportunity to do well, it's still not guaranteed that you're going to have a new contract or play next week. So there's so many things out of your hands, and I kind of knew that. And after January, I knew, you know, my time was up at Reading for sure.
Yeah, and from then on, obviously, you spent the time at Charlton and you know, still playing Championship football and still earning your trade there. But from then on, it sort of became a bit of a sad story, really, of injuries, of moving around, of not being able to find a footballing home, basically. What was the story behind the injuries, and how? I think it was a hip injury, and was that something that you carried for a number of years before you retired or not?
Yeah, to be honest, I've had a kind of niggling hip injury since the age of 21, 22. I was always one of those players that didn't want to stay in the physio room. I loved training every day. And I just did whatever I could to stay out of it, whether it was the right thing or the wrong thing. I don't know. I just used to, you know, bang a couple of painkillers and off we go again. And it was something that progressively got worse. And because of how my hip is, I'll pick up muscle injuries quite easily. The thing is, with Charlton, I was still in a position where I could play. I was still playing for Wales. So even though I didn't play a full season for Reading in the Prem, I was still playing for Wales, still part of the Euro squad, starting games in the qualifiers. And then, yeah, I mean, at Charlton, it started really well, and then new owners come in. And the new owners come in, they wanted to get rid of all of the British players and bring in their own players. So I had a similar thing at Reading, at Charlton, that I did at Reading. It was basically, you need to leave. We need to get you off the wage bill. I was coming in, training by myself on a Saturday. And it was just like, okay, well, I don't deserve it, but I'm not going to sit around and cry about it. But it just happened, and I was there for 2 years, and I was just about to leave. I was going to move to a club, and in, I'd say, 30 seconds in a Wales qualifier, I dislocated my shoulder. I was out for 4 months. And then by the time I was fit again, it was the end of the season, and then I was kind of stuck again, and kind of went from there, went to MK Dons. Again, like we were talking about before, you go into somewhere and you know straight away you don't fit in. No, not for me. I knew straight away, as soon as I got in there, I thought, I've made a mistake here. And it was probably a step too far for the club.
Yeah.
The Championship was too big for the club. I mean, the club had a great stadium, which, and the manager, you know, seemed like a good guy at the time, and I thought, you know, they'd done well in League One, got promoted. It's my a good chance to, you know, got the number 11, but I was playing number 9. Good chance to kind of get my career back on track. And yeah, it was a tough time.
Yeah, well, as you found with Aberdeen, was probably the sort of last sort of successful stint that you had at a club. And then from then on, it kind of, you know, the hip injury sort of took too much of a toll. But to have the Euro 2016 as an experience to almost, I mean, as you wouldn't have ever thought of that at the time necessarily, but to in effect cap off a career which was cut short but nonetheless still, you know, successful, to have that and to, you know, you came on for a good portion of the semi-final game against Portugal, how sort of proud are you of that, to be able to look back on it and have been a part of that?
Oh, it was amazing. You know, it's quite cliche and bit sickening in the mouth to hear, but you know, when you're a kid, you dream of playing international tournaments, and do you know what? That they were one of the best 7 weeks of my life, being away with the camp. I always said I love being in a group. I'd like to think I was always, you know, a big part of groups, and we had an amazing group with Wales, and what we achieved there was beyond what anyone could expect. And it was the same thing, really. We kind of had the belief in the team. We obviously had some good players that would get us through it in moments needed. And you know, to be a part of that was amazing. You know, to play in the semi final of the Euros, dream come true. So with all the other stuff, when I look back and say, you know, Championship winner, and I played in the European Championship semi-final, I can't really complain.
No, it's not a bad record to have, is it? And you know, as someone who can look back on their Reading career, how do you sort of feel that fans view you as a player and as a person? Are you satisfied with sort of the way that your career is? You know, as it gets talked about these days, are you satisfied with the sort of way that you kind of left the club, and with the fans, how they might their opinion of you would be now?
Yeah, to be honest, I think I have one. When I look back on my career, I think I have one regret, which is not playing in the Premier League when I deserve to answer that question.
Mm.
Looking back at my time at Reading, you know, I joined the club at 14. Loved the club, bought into it. Kind of grew up, understood. You know, there's more to football than what's going on the pitch. You've got, you know, your politics. You've got your fans' views. You've got your things. And this was also at the time when I was coming through, where you've got social media as well. So you've got people who wouldn't think twice to hammer you, without thinking, you know, or caring, you know, what ramifications you get for that. I mean, when I spent my time at Reading, I kind of obviously blocked you lot, giving me some rubbish. You kind of get used to it. Do you take it to heart? I didn't take it to heart. I did when I was younger, coming through.
Yeah.
Because when you're a young player, you want to be loved by the fans, you want to impress the fans, you want to have good feedback because it gives you confidence. But the moment you have a bad game and everyone's saying, you know, you're shit, you should never be a player, I'm better than you, and you just think, do you know what, once you kind of get over that, you just laugh it off.
Yeah.
So I mean, you know, with fans' views, I mean, I see a lot of stuff about Guntz gets absolutely caned, and what people don't appreciate is Guntz is, number one, a great guy. He's been loyal to the club, and he's one of the most capped international players for Wales. Played in the Premier League. He deserves some kind of respect. And, you know, players aren't always going to play their best. They're not always going to play their best. But he, for example, just digging him out for, you know, an easy win here. But I felt the same for me. I had mixed kind of responses. I mean, I can remember coming off the pitch, West Ham scored two, and, you know, still having people saying, I should have scored a hat-trick. And you know what? It's just, that's why I think the gap between players and fans is growing bigger and bigger, because you need fans for football, and there's nothing better than when the fans are on your side. So I refer back to the year we won the league. Amazing atmosphere. We're all close. We all enjoy playing it. But I look at times now where, you know, I was at the game earlier in the season, and, you know, so someone gives the ball away and you hear the, oh, the fuck. You just think, oh, and it's like the fans have a right to do that. 100%. They're paying their money. They can say what they want, but when, as a player, you're getting abused, your family are getting abused, you know, it's just ridiculous, really. It's ridiculous. And then for fans to think that players should respond to that, or even try and take notice. I mean, if this was the other way, fans are getting pelted by people with a big following, they'd go quiet, 100%.
Yeah, well, I've always, my personal view is if a player has ever wanted to give it back to a fan on social media, as long as it's, you know, not too out of the boundaries, then I've always thought that it is fair game in a way, because on social media, you should say things to people in the way that you'd say it on the street. If you wouldn't just absolutely launch into a tirade at someone on the street. So why should you do it on social media? And I wonder if you think that whether social media is actually a good thing for footballers, because when I was thinking of players I wanted to interview for this podcast, and I thought of yourself, and I noticed that it was incredibly embarrassing when I noticed that you blocked us on Twitter, because I thought, oh God, what, like, whether you hate us or whatever, like, it's just, and credit to you for you know, saying, oh yeah, don't sort of walk off a duck's back and everything like that, because it can, and I totally understand that it can be something that you carry with you, and it does, as you say, lead to a divide between fans and players, when almost it's like players can't trust fans to have their back.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you've got to understand as well, from a player's point of view, for a player to engage in something like that, it doesn't, because you get so many people now that are just looking for a reaction, just to say they've got a reaction.
Yeah.
As a player, you don't want to draw attention to that thing. So the best thing is to either block it or just ignore it. And we're, you know, players have been advised on a daily, weekly basis not to engage in anything like that, because, you know, it could look bad on the club, it could look bad on, you know, the player. And you see, every time a player comes back at a fan, if in a negative way, it makes some kind of press.
Yeah.
It gets about and straight away, and, you know, you're saying it's fair game. It's not fair game. It's not fair game at all. And that's the problem with social media. It's great as a player to build a following. I mean, you have genuine people that think you're great, you're a fan, whether you play well or you're not. They're like, you know, you've got positive fans, but social media has allowed a lot of negativity. It's a lot more negative than it is positive. And that's the problem with it. It's very fake. You know, a lot of fans, not just saying Reading fans, but a lot of fans in particular, will give you a bit on Twitter and then come running up to you and ask for a photo and for you to sign their shirt. So, I mean, it swings and roundabouts, really. As a player, you won't entertain it. And do you know what? At the end of the day, as a player, you want to be loved by the fans. That's the whole point of football. Fans come to enjoy watching you try and do well. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't happen. And sometimes you're not going to please everyone. People will take an instant dislike to you, or someone might not like what you're doing or think you can do better. And, you know, I've had people mention to me before, you're shit, why don't you do this, why don't you do that? And I tell them, well, why don't you do it? Why can't you do it? And it's just ridiculous, you know. But that's the problem with social media these days. It's a great platform for players to build, you know, a brand, have interaction with fans. But I think a lot of people take advantage of that.
Yeah, definitely. I can understand how it can end up grating. And you're right. It's all brilliant for us as sort of viewers and media, as, oh, players giving a bit back to a fan, but as I can imagine a club just saying, do not send anything back, pretend it doesn't happen, and kind of, you know, get your head down and focus on your football, which, yeah, as you say, it does sort of drive a bit of a divide between players and fans. Thank you very much for coming on, Simon, and having a chat with us. Last question I wanted to ask you, before I let you go, is really on your sort of post-playing career. You've made a bit of your name for yourself in sort of business and investment, and also in your CBD products in sports. And it's really interesting to have heard you talk so much today about, you know, your understanding of the mental side of the game, and how, you know, all that and the mentality is so important, and people's characters are so important. And now you become an expert in the physical side of the game, and found a really interesting sort of different perspective on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, throughout my career, I kind of knew that it was never going to last forever. And I think the biggest thing is the constant cycle of players that have struggled after football. I've seen it a lot. It's quite a big thing inside of football where, you know, people aren't even thinking about what happens after football, because football's been your life throughout your heart, you know, since you were young. It's all you ever wanted to do, and then once you're in it, it's all you ever know. So I always had an interest outside of football. As I said, I didn't think it would last forever. Didn't think it would happen this early. But, I mean, the CBD thing came up because, as I mentioned before, from a young age, I was kind of reliant on painkillers and couldn't sleep after games. Anxiety through the roof. You know, footballers have so much anxiety. They try. No one really talks about it, but, you know, think about playing on TV in front of millions of people and coming out and playing in front of 30,000 people, you know, and you make your first pass and you give it away and the fans are on you and people are, you know, just saying what a bad pass that was on telly. And, you know, it has a big effect and it can drag on. So I kind of, the older I got, I thought, you know, with injuries and I knew I was struggling, I thought I'd take some CBD. I thought I've got nothing to lose here. Yeah, it worked really well. And then I thought, I'd like to think I'm quite entrepreneurial. I thought, you know what, I'll just do it myself. I see a bit of a gap in the market with it. And, yeah, we spent about a year developing it, the formulations and everything to make sure it's safe and transparent. And, yeah, we've had a lot of good feedback from it.
Yeah, and is it something that you can see? Because when you talk about CBD, a lot of people will think, is that on the banned substance list or anything like that? Is it something that you can see properly entering the sort of elite football, you know, the way that it works and everything?
Yeah, definitely. So CBD is not on the prohibited list. CBD in itself is safe for players. So that's kind of where we saw an opportunity as well for elite athletes. I mean, I found it very beneficial for myself. So we looked into it. And in professional football, most players are never 100% fit. And for them to keep on training and playing, they're reliant on painkillers, sleeping tablets, glorified drug users, like that. That's what they're reliant on to get them through. And yeah, I just wanted a natural kind of solution for that, whether you're a footballer or not. And it seems to have, you know, made some positive moves at the moment, and we're having some really good feedback with it. So really, really interesting direction. And yeah, it's legal, doesn't get you high or anything like that. Very, very, very scientific and very interesting industry.
Oh, well, best of luck with that then, Simon. Thank you very much for coming on today. And as I'm sure you're aware, you're always welcome back of the Mad Stad for, you know, in the stands, or if I'm sure you've been invited to do the old Golden Gamble draw and stuff like that. So thank you very much for coming on today.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.